Those bed bugs. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We are going to talk a bit about bed bugs today with our guest, PJ Leash. He manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I love that song, The Mean Old Bed Bug Blues. That was written back in 1927, and so we know darn well they've been around at least since 1927. We'll get a little history of the bed bugs today as we talk with PJ Leash, and of course a bit about their biology as well, and answer your bed bug questions, and we'll answer all your other questions as well as we move along today here on the Ideas Network. You can join in. Any insect question is fine. We're going to talk bed bugs for a little while, but any insect question you might have is fair game. So give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And PJ Leash, hey, first, thanks for telling us about that song.
Yeah, as we were chatting in the studio here, Larry, there's a surprising number of songs out there that have insects at least mentioned in them, and there's one that happens to have bed bugs in the title.
It's great. Well, let's talk about those bed bugs. What kind of insect is the bed bug?
So bed bugs are from a group we call the order Hemiptera, and basically what that means is they're a type of insect with sucking mouth parts. So they've got like a hypodermic needle for a mouth part, if you think about it. Some of their close relatives that folks are going to be familiar with, things like box elder bugs, stink bugs, and aphids are all in the same group. So anatomically speaking, they have a number of similarities.
I have never seen one in person, thankfully. What do they look like?
So adult bed bugs are flat, and if you think about a lot of our insects or arthropods that are parasites, they're flat so they can get closer to their host and get between hairs and things like that. But they're got flat bodies, kind of a reddish brownish color, and they're about the size of a small apple seed. And okay. When I chat with folks, sometimes think they are too small to see or invisible, but no, you can clearly see them with the naked eye. They're big enough. So those are the adults. The juveniles are going to be smaller. When they just hatch out of the egg, the youngest juvenile or nymphal stage might just be about a millimeter or two long. So we're talking about a 20th of an inch long or so. So the juveniles will be quite tiny.
Okay, and they bite.
Yes, they need a blood meal to go through and go through the growth stages, and then the females are going to need that nutrition to produce her batches of eggs. So they are blood feeders, primarily on humans. You know, if there are animals in the house, they could potentially bite those as well, but they are really well adapted to feeding on human blood in particular.
And dangerous or just annoying?
Well, in the grand
scheme... Plenty annoying, for sure.
Yes. Oh, and if you think about it, and I've chatted with folks that have bumped into bed bugs, I mean, it causes a tremendous amount of stress. And then you're worried, you know, if you bumped into them in a hotel, did you bring them back home? And so the next, you know, month or two, you might have some pretty restless sleep. So that can be really stressful. In terms of actual health impacts, you know, if you just had a few bed bug bites... some folks don't react much at all. Some folks react similar to they would to mosquitoes. So you might get some red welts, but mm-hmm. that could be about it. If you had, you know, hundreds or thousands of bed bug bites, you know, then there might be a little bit more of a reaction. But the good news is they don't transmit any human diseases the way that mosquitoes do.
If I suspect that I may have brought some home with me from my trip, could I just take off my clothes and my suitcase with the clothes in it and stick it outside if it's zero? Or?
Well, in general, it's probably not cold enough for that type of thing.
Okay.
You know, if it were an Arctic blast and it's minus 20 outside and they go from nice and warm to that for several days, that may be enough to kill them. If you do stay at a hotel, though, and I know a lot of folks will be traveling with this upcoming holiday season, if you suspect you might have bumped into them, couple precautions you could do when you come home. You know, if you have your clothes sealed up in a plastic bag and put it right into the laundry. Run it through a hot water cycle, basically the hottest water the clothes can handle, and more importantly, get it through the dryer nice and hot. Now, if you have a delicate item that can't go through the dryer, we can do some other things. We'll talk about that in a second. But really, heat can do bed bugs in. Most insects start dying at about 115 degrees or so. With bed bugs, it's in the ballpark of about 120, 122. Once they get up to that temperature, they're just toast. So if you have items you can run through the dryer, the heat gets them, they really dry out and desiccate, that'll kill them as well. So that can be a precaution. Clothes go right into the laundry and go through the dryer. Some dryers have inserts, little platforms you could put shoes or maybe even a small duffel in there and just heat it up. To take care of things. Otherwise, if you had sensitive items that could perhaps go in the freezer, you can put them in the freezer. If you have a nice cold freezer that's down about, you know, 0 degrees, you can put them in there about 5 to 7 days is enough to kill them. If you're not sure how cold your freezer really gets, I would go with about 2 weeks as a general precaution.
All right. PJ Leash, our guest. And we have Joe in Madison has a question relating to bed bugs. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I was wondering, are there any other bugs or pests that bite similar to bed bugs? I know that the classic bed bug bite is three little dots in a row. Is there any variation with the bed bug bites? And are there any others that look like it?
Yeah, good questions.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I've heard this, you know, three bite marks in a row for a long time. And when you chat with bed bug experts, they, you know, have kind of come to the conclusion that that probably isn't really a hard, firm pattern. What can happen is if you are sleeping and say you have your leg sticking out from under a bed sheet, bed bugs, if they were there, might go to skin that's easily accessible. And so you could have them perhaps get to the edge of a bed sheet and feed there and get a little bit of a linear pattern. But in most bed bug bites, you're not going to see a line pattern like that. So you're not necessarily going to see three dots in a row. It can really be scattered, kind of a random, if you will, a little bit like mosquito bites. And as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, everyone reacts differently. Some folks can be bitten by bed bugs and really have almost no reaction to it, no redness or bumps, anything like that. Other folks might get pretty good size welts on the skin, and in terms of the reaction, it may last longer on some individuals than others. Some folks, you know, the red marks might clear up in a day or two, and other folks it might last several days or a week. And another interesting thing, if you have not been bitten by bed bugs before, there can sometimes be a delay for the bite marks to actually show up. Sometimes it might be a week or more later before the red marks actually appear on your skin, which can make it hard to kind of think back and figure out, was I in this hotel at that time or that hotel?
Yeah. So there we go. Joe, thank you. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Mark in Waukesha also has something relating to bed bugs. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My question was regarding how bed bugs currently don't transmit disease, but I was wondering why that is and if they could ever, you know, another organism use them to actually transmit disease in the future.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a great question as well. And I know a lot of researchers have looked specifically at bed bugs because we know other blood-sucking insects like mosquitoes can certainly transmit certain diseases. When you look at a disease that's spread by insects, a couple of things have to happen. First of all, the insect has to be able to pick up the a disease-carrying microorganism or pathogen. that pathogen then has to be able to reproduce inside the insect to increase its numbers and then get back to a place in a location in the insect that it can get spread further. So if we're talking about diseases in mosquitoes, for example, they have to ingest a microbe and then have it survive through the midgut, make its way up to the salivary glands to get back into a person. With bed bugs, there have been some studies looking at this. There was one study just in the last few years that looked at a disease called Chagas disease, which can be transmitted by a critter called kissing bugs. And basically what that study found is they got it to transmit in theory in the lab, but in the real world it just is extremely unlikely to happen. The reason for that is with something like Chagas disease, it's really in the droppings of the insect. And with kissing bugs, what happens is you get bitten by that kissing bug again and again and again, and it turns out you tend to kind of scratch at the site. And so it's really you're wounding, and then the pathogen is getting in there. With bed bugs, they basically feed and run away. And then their droppings are elsewhere on furniture and things like that. So they made it happen in theory in a lab experiment, but out in the real world, it just isn't going to happen. So a lot of folks have looked at it, but so far we just haven't seen bed bugs transmitting human diseases.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the call. Let's take a call from Aaron in Spooner. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Larry. I actually was bitten by bed bugs once, but I had a question for your entomologist. Here, my grandmother, she was born in 1915, and are you still with me?
Yeah.
She was born in 1915. I remember a story she told me once when she rented a room. She said that it had bed bugs, and the landlord lit some kind of, she's obviously deceased now, so I can't ask her, but he lit like a candle, and she said it smelled like burning tires, and that was the end of the bed bugs. And I was curious if you would know what that was. Maybe it was DDT. I don't know, but I don't know. I've never heard of it before or since. So,
well, what about it? Thanks, Aaron. By the way.
So, interesting question, and it gets into kind of the history of bed bugs, and there's a really interesting article by one of the top bed bug experts in the country, Mike Potter, and in his article, he describes some of the things humans used to do to try to get rid of bed bugs, and they would do things like burn sulfur indoors, which would just have to smell awful. So I wonder if, you know, perhaps it could have been something along those lines. These days, I don't know of any type of candle that would be effective at dispersing them or getting rid of them. But if you look historically, things like sulfur were used. There were a variety of older insecticides used in like the 40s and 50s that are no longer around today. At various points in time, they even used things like cyanide gas. And so you'd have, I've seen pictures in like army barracks situation where they go to the second floor room and they work backwards. And I've got a picture of a guy in a gas mask. They're, you know, cutting open a can. They release this vapor and they're going room to room to room and backing their way out of the building. So folks used to use some pretty drastic things to manage bed bugs. But in terms of candles these days, I don't know of anything out there that would really be effective.
There you go, Aaron. Thanks a lot for calling. Rod in Madison has something for us. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, hi. The bed bug thing, I always remember my wife. She used to travel the state as part of her job quite frequently, and she always said that the first thing she did when she got to a hotel, went into the room, was to put her suitcase in the bathtub, and then she would go back and check the bed for any signs of bed bugs. And once she did that and she saw no signs of any issues, then she would take care of getting her suitcase out, hanging up clothes, whatever. And then she would, if she ever did find any signs, then she would go right back to the office and ask for a different room.
Very good points there, Rod. What about Rod's wife? Was she doing the right thing there? It sounds like it.
Definitely, and this would be a good point to talk about some of those things. So, as the caller had mentioned, you know, if I'm going into a hotel room, I do something very similar. I tend to put my bag or suitcase typically in the bathroom, in like the bathtub or hard bathroom counter. Those are areas that tend to be open, brighter, not as many nooks and crannies where bed bugs could potentially hide. So it's not good bed bug habitat. So I would put that down there. Then I go and inspect around the bed, and bed bugs are typically associated with the bed, although they can be associated with nearby chairs and nightstands and things like that. So I get into a hotel room. One of the first things I do is check behind the headboard, because that's a nice, tucked away, hard to get to spot. Bed bugs can easily get there. They can come out at night. They only have to wander a few feet to go to a blood meal. Most hotel headboards, if you think about it, they just sit on a little lip on the wall. And if you have two people, you can lift them straight up. And so that's often one of the first places I check. Also like to peek at the back of the nightstands. Along the, there's often a strip of carpeting where the wall meets the floor, and if you can peek behind that. On the bed itself, I usually take the corners off of the sheets and look at the mattress and box spring. If you think about hotel rooms, you know, they're changing the pillowcases and sheets, you know, when new guests come and go. But one thing they may not change as often would be something like the skirts around the box springs. And so that could be a potential hiding spot for them. So I peek around those areas. But you're definitely right. You want to go in, and it's worth the time to even do a 5 or 10 minute inspection, because if you find bed bugs, then you might have really saved yourself. About the worst thing you could do is get into your hotel room, chuck your suitcase on the mattress or even on the luggage rack, because if the previous person had bed bugs in their luggage and they're on the luggage rack and you put yours there, that's not necessarily a good spot for it. And so if you toss your stuff there and head out for dinner, we know that bed bugs are actually attracted to the scent of worn clothing. And so they can sometimes wander into suitcases and things like that. So it really is worth it to do a quick 5 or 10 minute check in your hotel room. If you want more information on how to do that, a good resource I will mention, the University of Minnesota has a bed bug site called Let's Beat the Bed Bug. And if you go to that website, they've got different links for travelers and home visitors and all sorts of other groups of folks. And they have some really good information specific for travelers, and it tells you how to do a hotel room inspection and things like that. So that's a great website. There's also a relatively new app I'll mention, developed by an entomologist at The Ohio State University. I just found out about it a couple days ago. It's called the Bed Bug Field App, and I downloaded it. It's really cool. It talks about identifying bed bugs, how to inspect your hotel room. It's for both Apple and Android devices. So that's something, and it's free too. So great to just download on your phone so you don't have to remember all the stuff. You can just pull that up.
And what's the title of the app again?
The Bed Bug Field Guide.
The Bed Bug Field Guide. There you go. PJ Leash, our guest today. We've zeroed in a bit on bed bugs. We'll take other questions relating to insects as well here on the Ideas Network. You can join in 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Sarah Hopeful, our on-air producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at bed bugs today on the Ideas Network and other insects as well. Larry Mueller here with my guest, PJ Leash, who manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Always great to have him come by. Thank you so much for listening in. Dave and Toma, I believe, is up next. So let's go there. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I might have another bug question for you. I get an occasional bite in the wintertime, and it looks like a flea bite the way the skin seems to break down. But like I say, it's very occasional. I'm wondering what you might think that would be. And my other question was about the bed bugs themselves. Is it worse than it used to be, or is it just kind of captured our attention lately? And I'll take your answers off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the first question, mystery bite in winter, that's really hard to tell what it could be. During the summer months when you're outside, lots of potential biting insects from mosquitoes, black flies, and the list goes on and on. during the winter months, we just don't have those outdoor insects, or only under really unusual circumstances. You know, indoors, though, if you bumped into bed bugs, if you have bed bugs around and there is a population, they're not going to go away. So I would expect them to, you know, keep biting, and you'd see more bites over time or increasing number of bites. If you, you know, suspected something like fleas, you know, if you have animals in the house, I would take a close look at those. If you have fleas around, there's got to be some animal that would serve as a host for those. Otherwise, there's not a very long list. One thing that comes to mind, though, is that when it comes to insect bites in general, there's no way to really simply look at it.
Yeah.
Unless you saw it bite or sting to figure out who or what did it. And there's a lot of other medical explanations for skin reactions. You know, you could react to something in the environment and it can look exactly like an insect bite. So if you're looking at the short list of potential insects during the winter months and not finding anything, then I get a little suspicious that there might be some other non-insect cause for the reaction.
Yeah. Poor spiders, they get such a bad rap. So many times people say, well, that's a spider bite, but it probably wasn't.
Probably, yeah. Probably not.
Yeah, go ahead.
The second half of the question about, you know, bed bugs, is this something new or is it just getting hyped up more? There's really an interesting history to bed bugs. We had historically problems that built up in Europe during the, you know, 14, 1500s and things like that, with invention of larger ships and planes that could cross the oceans. They really got moved around. In some parts of the planet, they really became fairly common. And then we got into, you know, early 1900s, we invented central heating, which really made it better for bed bugs because they don't do well in the cold.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it's interesting, we got to World War II. And that's when DDT came out. And when DDT came out, bed bugs almost went extinct. We nearly eradicated them from the planet, or mostly did. We just basically didn't see bed bugs for several decades. The 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, if you saw bed bugs as, to an entomologist, that was something rare, unique. Today we can find them really, you know, just about anywhere you start looking for them. It turned out that we had this resurgence of bed bugs in the 90s and in 2000s with increasing international trade, and it went from places like Asia and other continents and really got moved around with business travelers and things like that. Once it got into the U.S. and big international business cities, it moved into small towns too. So it really has bumped up back on the radar in about the last 20, 30 years in the U.S.
Very interesting. Well, we have, let's see, Carl in Black River Falls. Your turn. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to know if I wanted to see one of those on a bed, do you need to put a black sheet of paper so that the little creature might show up? Or what kind of a background or surface would you need to check that out? And the other thing is, do these bed bugs fly, jump, or just crawl?
Okay.
Sure. So let's go with the second question first. Bed bugs don't have wings, and their legs are really only adapted for crawling, so they can't jump, they can't fly. In terms of the first question,
Which was paper, something black paper, he said, but I wouldn't think you'd want black paper.
Right. I mean, if you think about mattresses, they tend to be white or off-white, a pale color. And if bed bugs are on that, they usually stand out.
You'll see them.
Yeah. Now, the thing about bed bugs, though, they don't like to be out in the open. So if you're just looking at the surface of a mattress or side of a mattress, you're unlikely to see them there. Where they like to hide are places where there's nooks and crannies, and they can fit into some tight quarters. So seams, you know, cracks on a metal or wooden bed frame, places like that. Some other signs to look for, in addition to the bed bugs, keep an eye out for bed bug eggs. Those would be whitish, cylindrical, really pretty small, about a 25th of an inch long, or about a millimeter long or so. So not big. They're big enough, if you know what they look like, you can see them with the naked eye. Another sign to keep out or keep in mind, bed bug droppings, which is the digested blood. The analogy I can best think of, imagine you had a black ballpoint pen that was kind of leaky. If you dab that onto fabric, and you got these dark stains, and there'd be a little bit of gritty material on it too, those would be, that's what bedbug droppings look like. And so if you're seeing signs like that, then that's a red flag, and you should do some more detective work.
All right. Carl, thank you so much for calling. Mark, in Green Bay, we turn to you. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I'm wondering about the size of flies. Do flies continue to grow and molt after they pupate?
So the short answer is no. Once an insect has molted, and you know, if it goes through complete metamorphosis, gone from the pupal stage to the adult stage, it stops molting. So it doesn't get any bigger. If you were to look at something like a fruit fly that maybe ingests a pretty good amount of liquid, its abdomen may swell up a little bit, so a negligible amount of size gain, but it's not going to molt or get any larger once it gets to that adult wing stage.
There we go. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Tom in Madison, your turn.
Yes, hello. I had heard that the bed bugs are coming back now because DDT has become biodegraded in the environment. And so now we have nothing that works on bed bugs. The other thing I'd like to mention is that I have heard that you can capture bed bugs by using the leaves from kidney beans. Apparently the underside of the leaves of kidney beans have prongs that actually spear the joints of bed bugs and captures them, and they can't get loose. So you put those on the floor around your bed and capture them. Can you make comments on that, please?
Okay.
Yeah, so there is some truth to the bean story. It turns out certain beans have these little hair-like structures on the leaves called trichomes, and on a microscopic level, when bedbugs contact these, it does spear through essentially their feet or tarsi, and they become impaled and stuck by it. So there is some truth to that. I just got back from a big annual entomology conference, and some entomologists and scientists are basically looking at that, and they've taken detailed pictures with scanning electron microscopes, and they're trying to fabricate a synthetic version so that rather than having to crumble these bean leaves around your bedroom and make a mess of things like that, you could have a sheet of synthetically produced stuff that would have the same effect. So some folks are actually looking at that as a way to make a better detection or monitoring trap for bed bugs.
Huh. Interesting. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the call. And Kathy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Paul, have you ever heard of the suggestion of taking a roll of duct tape if you're not sure if you have bed bugs or not, and or you can't see them very well? Take a roll of duct tape, peel it back upon itself about, I don't know if it's a foot or something, so that you have the sticky side out and roll it in the cracks of the mattress or you suspect you might have bed bugs and you might pick up some.
That'd probably work, wouldn't it?
Yes, I would expect that to work. I have heard of folks doing things like that with duct tape or really just about any type of tape you had, like Scotch tape or like clear packing tape or even lint rollers.
Duct tape's nice and wide, though.
Yeah, duct tape's nice and wide. Pretty much everyone has some duct tape, and duct tape, they say it fixes everything, or at least it can potentially help find bed bugs. But yeah, there is some truth to that. You're using essentially a type of sticky trap, if you will, that we can roll more easily along places we want to focus our attention. So seams, cracks and crevices, and things like that.
Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate it. Mark from Milwaukee sent us an email and advises people to be wary of used furniture. He had some bed bugs for 8 years after purchasing some used furniture.
So there are concerns with things like used furniture. And I see here in Madison, and this is probably true of a lot of college towns during that move-in, move-out period for apartments, there's a lot of furniture on the curb. And I'm all gung-ho about reducing, reusing, recycling and that. But there is always a risk that if you get that secondhand couch or chair, other piece of furniture, there could potentially be bed bugs in it, and that can be expensive to get rid of. So if you really wanted that piece of furniture, I would encourage you to at least do a very, very thorough inspection when getting secondhand items.
Stephanie in Madison, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I wanted to share a small story. I unfortunately, my family's had a couple of bouts with bed bugs. One being, we just had early on, before bed bugs were really well publicized in Madison, just had a party with all of the perfect storm of the wrong things to do. Friends from who had been traveling out of the country, staying over, borrowed a friend's futon mattress. Just a whole host of the wrong things to do. And one of the things that our exterminator had us do after a couple of different applications of you know, coming back, you know, after this amount of time and that amount of time, was that we took a bowl, put some dry ice in it, set it in the middle of an area that had... we've, you know, reported where we'd seen them or been bitten by them, and of course the bed. And then we took some double-sided tape and outlined, you know, and gave a little bit of a distance and outlined around that bowl. So the, I think it's carbon monoxide or dioxide that is, comes off of the dry ice is what the bug is attracted to. And then we would sneak in like around 2 a.m. or something. And that kind of would bring them out or not bring them out if the application was successful.
Hmm. Hadn't heard of that. I'm sure you probably have, BJ.
I have, yes. So in general, we know that bed bugs are attracted to a number of different things, including carbon dioxide, which would come off from dry ice, some things like heat, and then some other chemical cues as well. But I have heard of folks using essentially a CO2 carbon dioxide or dry ice type device to release that. And the thought is bed bugs, if they're in the area, they may be drawn into that. And if you get them stuck to tape or a glue board trap, that can be used as a monitoring or detection method to confirm their presence.
So interesting.
That can work. There's a number of other trapping methods as well. One of the best ones out there, and this is widely used by the pest control industry and in other industries as well, are these traps called climb up interceptor traps is one brand name. There's a couple other ones out there. It's basically a small plastic cup within a cup. And so there's basically this plastic device with an inner moat, and that goes under your bed leg. And so if bed bugs are on the bed wanting to leave, or if they're off the bed wanting to climb up, they have to go through this trap device. They get stuck in that moat, and so that can be really useful for detecting them as well.
Yeah. Stephanie, are you free of bed bugs now?
Oh, thank goodness. So for several years now, it's the worst thing imaginable. It's like moving in place, like... And if you have any phobias whatsoever around bugs, it is also quite traumatic to the whole family.
Well, stay listening because Jan in Verona has a scary story, I believe. Jan, hi.
Hi. I was just wanting to tell you a really scary story. Our grandson was in a residential treatment center in southern Wisconsin and for other issues, but anyway. And he... woke up one morning and he was covered with little red insect bites. And so it turned out to be bed bugs, and they had to bring the exterminators in, and they did, and they brought them in, and they had to do it several times in order to get rid of the bed bugs, even close off the entire wing of the area where
wow.
the children were. And it was so excruciating for our grandson to have that happen to him. He was just covered, and it was itchy, and they had to treat him, obviously, with Benadryl and all that. But it was pretty amazing. We also had to make sure that he changed his entire clothes, including his shoes, before he came to our house for a visit, because, of course, we didn't want those to be in our home either.
Oh, yeah.
So we've had a horrible story about bed bugs, but... the other thing is, how frequently do you have to check your own home to make sure that they're not there after a visit like this from
somebody who has them on their body or in their clothing.
Yeah, this time of the year, there are probably lots of people staying over at grandma's or whatever relative's place. What do you do?
I mean, if you're staying at a relative's house, you know, I would hope if they had bed bugs, they'd give you a heads up about that. But if you're staying at a hotel or a, you know, Airbnb or VRBO, as we discussed earlier, it's always good to check. And if you do a visual inspection, if you find any signs of bed bugs, you know, look for in a hotel a different room a ways away from that room. Bed bugs, if they build up their population in a given room, they can move basically through the walls, through electrical outlet cover plates and things like that. There's about a 20% chance or so they'll move to the rooms next door, above or below, across the hall. And so you want to move a ways away from that. If you stay at a hotel or Airbnb, VRBO, something like that, some rental property, you know, if you didn't see any signs of bed bugs after or when you check in and you didn't experience any type of bites, things like that, when you get home, you know, the chances that you had bumped into bed bugs and brought them back is going to be really pretty slim.
And if you have somebody over and you wonder after the fact, I wonder if that person might have brought in bed bugs, you can just go ahead and do a visual inspection of the rooms, I guess, especially the bedroom where the person was.
Yeah, you could always do a quick visual inspection. You could go to the hardware store and buy what are called glue board traps, which aren't great for monitoring bed bugs, but they're inexpensive. It's just cardstock with sticky glue surface on it. You can put those down around the bed, and if bed bugs wandered on it, they may get stuck. That could help you find it. If you are really concerned that you may have bed bugs, it never hurts to call a pest control company. There are a lot of companies that have a lot of experience dealing with bed bugs. Some of the larger companies have crews that specifically deal with bed bugs, so they've really honed in on how to do the inspections, where to look, that sort of thing. Some companies also have trained bed bug detection dogs that are really effective. These are used very regularly in industries like the hotel and hospitality industry, because you can have a dog go in and inspect a room in a matter of minutes, where it may take humans, you know,
a long time,
yeah, half an hour or more to do a thorough inspection. And so you can have these dogs go through all the hotel rooms very, very quickly and do a general screening. And so that's always an option. If you have been looking, you think you have bed bugs, you just want to know, you can always call around to some of the local pest control companies in your area and ask if they have a bed bug detection dog available. That can give you a very quick yes or no if they may be present in your house.
Hmm. Well, Martha in Menominee has something for us. Hi, Martha.
Yes, hello. This is interesting. When I was in Tennessee, where it's, you know, quite warm in the wintertime, checked into a hotel and didn't turn any lights on. Just set the luggage down, and it was a long drive, you know, from Wisconsin down to Tennessee. So I took a nap. I woke up an hour later with a bed bug crawling right almost to my arm. So I jumped up, captured it. I had not unloaded any of my luggage. So I took it to the front desk. I went on my cell phone and looked up, you know, what does a bed bug look like? Sure enough, I took it to the front desk. I captured it in a cup. You know, I put a cup over it and slipped a card underneath, so I captured it. Took it to the front desk, and I said, you know, I'm not feeling real good about staying in that room. And they refunded my money and recommended me to a hotel across the street. So my suggestion is, if you're people are traveling, they're like cockroaches. They come out in the dark, and if you turn the lights on, they go away. So anybody traveling, you might want to spend that first hour in the room, don't turn any lights on, and don't unpack your luggage till, you know, you're sure they're not going to come out. And when we got home, we just put all our clothes out on the deck for 3 nights in the freezing cold and didn't unpack anything. And then we figured, well, after a few nights of freezing cold, they won't survive. So then we felt safe to unpack, and we didn't have any problems.
Well, good.
So there you have it.
I'm glad you didn't have any problems, although 3 days may not have been enough if you, in fact, had bed bugs, right, PJ?
Right, yeah. When it comes to the cold, I mean, it's really got to be cold. Typically, we want to freeze things for at least 5 days if we know temperatures are in, say, a freezer, you know, under 20 degrees or so. Really, the colder you can get, if it's about 0 degrees in your freezer, the better. And also, you have to think and keep in mind, with an entire suitcase and clothes in there and other items, it's insulated. So it's not necessarily going to be the same temperature in the middle of the suitcase that it is on the outside air temperature. So often, just putting a suitcase out in the cold probably isn't going to be the most effective method out there.
Oh, there we go. Thanks a lot for that story, Martha. Appreciate it very much. PJ Leash, our guest today. He manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking the world of insects here on the Ideas Network with our guest PJ Leash from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. And as I said, we've zeroed in on bed bugs, but take other questions as well relating to insects. So you can join in 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Jim in Franklin next.
Hi. I'm having some issues with these tiny black bugs in my shower floor drain. They're probably about the size of maybe like a poppy seed or smaller. And when you turn on the water to, you know, get it warmed up, I've noticed just these periodically these little dots moving around. They tried to squish them, and sure enough, it's a little bug. They just kind of seem to jump out of the floor drain when you first get the water running. I did try boiling some hot water and dumping that in there, but that they're I'm still noticing them. I'm not sure if you know what that may be and how to get rid of them.
Yeah,
sure. And Jim, have you ever seen these little creatures actually jump around?
Yes.
Okay. What I wonder then, my suspicion is that you may be encountering something we call springtails, which are a close relative of insects. There are a lot of different types of springtails. Some are more pale colored. Some can be darker. One of the dark species in winter we actually find out on the snow and call them snow fleas. These springtails do pop up indoors sometimes. And the thing with springtails is they are associated with damp conditions. They tend to feed on things like fungal spores. So indoors, if you have things like house plants where the soil is kept damp and maybe a little overwatered, we can get springtails there. Otherwise, in a situation like this where they seem to be near a bathroom drain, a couple of thoughts. If there is an exterior window on the bathroom, you know, I would make sure that is sealed up. You know, potentially they had snuck in initially. I also would look for any signs of water damage around, because if you had a little bit of a leak around a drain, got some damp wood in there, had a little bit of mold, that might be some good conditions for them. Otherwise, I would also take a look at possibly doing a really thorough drain cleaning, Drano or something like that. If there are any organic gunk kind of built up, a little bit of film in the drain pipes, they could potentially be associated with that as well.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking right away when I heard about the drain. So, yeah, get a drain cleaner in there, and that should hopefully help.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Jim, for calling. Abby in Milwaukee, we'll go to you.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm coming back to the bed bugs, but I went to a school last year, and I was an incoming freshman. I no longer attend the school, but they had a sign before we were allowed to enter the dorm, the bed bug addendum, saying that we did not have bed bugs. And if we did have bed bugs, or, you know, we encountered bed bugs after 48 hours of being in the dorm, then we were at fault for bringing in the bed bugs. So I had bed bugs a week into my experience, and there were, like, little headboard things in our dorm rooms by our bed. So we're thinking that's where the bed bugs were. And this university's had problems with bed bugs in the past, so do you think it's possible that I brought in the bed bugs or that they were already in the room?
Well, you know, hard to tell for sure in a case like this. If you came, you know, from your previous home and had no history of bed bugs at all, then that would suggest that they were already in the building there. That would, you know, kind of be the most logical thing. Bed bugs, a couple thoughts about this general case. I mean, bed bugs can spread pretty easily from room to room, and so they're really problematic when you have any type of multi-unit housing. So apartment buildings, we just talked about hotels where you have lots and lots of rooms together, but also dorm rooms, because it's just room yep. after room after room, and if they're in one and they build up and no one mentions it, they're going to spread to some other rooms. So, you know, it very well could be the case that, and it sounds like that dorm may have had some issues in the past. Another thing they may be getting at, kind of with this general scenario, is getting rid of bed bugs isn't cheap. It's pretty expensive to do. And so I wonder if, you know, because of high costs in the past, they're really trying to, you know, cover themselves. And if it seems like someone else brought that in, they're maybe trying to move the cost elsewhere.
Yeah. Are they trying to charge you, Abby?
Well, they did. We ended up having to stay in the hotel and then Uber to school because none of my roommates and I had cars and they didn't cover any of the costs. You know, and we were just little freshmen, and we just were encountering these bed bugs. We didn't know what to do. So,
yeah.
Anyway, thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's see. Molly in Milwaukee, we'll get to you in just a minute because Christina in Glenwood City, I think, is up next. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Well, I love to travel, so bed bugs are a concern. And I've seen spray products in the box stores that suggest they prevent infestation. I prefer to avoid chemicals, but I'm wondering if this is an effective use.
Sure. So I've also seen some products at the hardware store that claim they may help, you know, repel or keep things off of suitcases. I haven't seen any studies showing that those products off the shelf really are effective at this point. However, at the National Entomology meeting I was just at, I saw a number of talks, folks that have been evaluating new repellent type products. And what's neat is that some of these products that should be coming out on the market in the next couple of years are essentially natural botanical based. They're based off of some of the components that can be found in coconut oil. And basically they have studied and isolated some of the compounds in there. And some of them have shown to have really long repellency for couple months at a time. So I think there are some of these repellent type products that will be coming out on the market in the next couple of years. Otherwise, I haven't seen anything great or that's really backed up by science that you can just find at the hardware store at this point.
There we go. Molly, thank you, Christina. Now on to Molly. Hi, Molly.
Hello. I unfortunately had a traumatic bed bug experience as well from a hotel that I stayed in outside of Washington, D.C., in 2013, and since then, I've become a bit of, sadly, a bed bug expert myself, nothing like you, TJ, of course, but I have helped a lot of people anonymously through Facebook and such. I've put it out there that I've had bed bugs, and that if anyone ever I have 5,000 Facebook friends because of my job. It's very high profile, but if anyone ever has bed bugs, to contact me, because I feel that people make a lot of mistakes up front, and one of the things I always tell people is not to throw anything out, that just spread bed bugs and you know, other things like that. But the main point that I just wanted to make was going back to staying in hotel rooms, and I know that people who I've told this sometimes think I'm crazy, but I travel a lot for my job, and I honestly never put my bags, after I do my thorough bed bug check, in the room. I never put my bags in the room. I never put them in the drawers. I never put them on the other bed. I never put them on the floor. I leave them in the bathtub the entire time that I'm there, unless I'm taking a shower, and then I put the bags in the sink area because I know the bed bugs can't climb onto the coolness of the porcelain. They don't like that. They're not going to climb into my bags that way. And I've suggested this to other people, and I know it sounds extreme, but honestly, after going through the trauma of bed bugs, I don't take any risks whatsoever, and this has worked for me. I don't know if it sounds insane or not, but
no.
Again, I leave my bags in the shower of the bathtub the entire time.
Yeah, no, that actually probably makes sense, PJ.
Yeah, a lot of good points that you just brought up, Molly. I do the exact same thing. If it's, say, just me attending a conference, I leave my bag or suitcase on the counter in the bathroom. It's just with the bright openness, smooth surfaces. Bed bugs don't like those types of habitats. They spend about 98% of their time in hiding, often around the bed areas where their blood meal is going to be close at hand. So definitely some good points about stashing suitcases in a place like the bathroom.
Joe had wondered about permethrins. This is an email. Is there anything to suggest permethrin works as a deterrent for bed bugs?
So in general, I would expect it to deter bed bugs. We do know we have permethrin-type products. Those are really registered, though, for doing things like repelling ticks outside. So if you're going out hunting this time of year, you know, we can spray boots and pants and things like that with permethrin. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a product like that that's really approved for, say, applying to a suitcase or other piece of luggage while you're traveling. As I just mentioned a minute or so ago, there are some newer products that'll be coming out on the market next couple of years that are intended to be applied to luggage while traveling.
There we go. And Sue, do you have a question for us?
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if we've had enough cold weather that I can safely prune my oak trees now, or if I need to wait until we're deeper into the winter so that worry about that beetle.
Yeah. The beetles, I'm trying to remember the official regulations on pruning.
It's about April to October, if I remember correctly. So it should
be. You can't do it between.
Correct.
And I would, if you've had really cold weather for quite a while, you're probably all right. I know a lot of people just wait till January or February to do it.
At this point, I'd say it should be cold enough, and the forecast doesn't look like it's going to get very warm anytime soon.
So you may be safe, Sue. Thank you. PJ Leash, our guest, he'll be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at the world of insects today with our guest, PJ Leash, who manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Always great to have him come by. Thanks for listening in. We've talked a lot about bed bugs, but certainly we can talk about other insects as well. I see James in Adams County has a question relating to something else. What about you? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to James in Adams County. Hi, James.
Hello. How are you, Larry?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening for about 40 years and delivering mail almost that long. And just to let you know, there's a spider in every mailbox. I also keep my car in a heated garage, so they get in my car and they have a pretty long life. I've seen some for several months at a time that pay me a visit. But yesterday I found a spider I've never seen before. It's just emerald green. It's about an inch long. And he had like a small straw-like body on the back. And when he was on my dash next to where it says airbag, I took a picture of him and he was kind of reaching up with that straw-type butt end and kind of like on purpose making it straight, and it was fascinating. And I've never seen a green spider like that before. Emerald green or transparent green is exactly what he looked like. I do have a picture if I have to send that in, but there can't be very many green spiders that I would see this time of year in Wisconsin.
And that big, it's not an emerald ash borer, that's for sure. An inch long, that'd be long.
So with the color, my first thought is one of the orb weavers, although the orb weavers can be common, especially in late summer, early fall, but they have a nice plump body. There are some other spiders called the long-jawed orb weavers that can have a more tubular type, elongate body. Yeah. And so I wonder if that is what you might have seen. So a couple of things you could do, James, just do a Google search for long-jawed orb weaver. There are some that can be greenish. Some species have different colors. That's my top suspicion. Otherwise, if that doesn't seem to pan out, feel free to look me up send me an email with that picture, and I'll be able to narrow it down for sure from that. But based on the description, I'm suspicious of a long-jawed orb weaver.
And just go to the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab.
Yeah, if you just Google that, you should be able to find it pretty easily.
There you go, James. Thanks a lot. Hey, and thanks for listening. Appreciate that very much as well. Well, and there's spiders in every mailbox, he says. Let's go to Jill in Racine. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Larry. We spend 3 months. We're winter techs. And it's a different bed. And other people have slept in it, and then people will sleep in it after us. And I use a mattress cover. I use my own blankets, my own sheets. But how do I clean that bed?
The mattress, you mean? Do you mean how do you clean the mattress, Jill?
Yeah, just to make sure there's nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of creepy.
I mean, from the bed bug perspective, and we've talked about this in the show, but what I would do is do a very thorough visual inspection of the mattress, look at all the seams all the way around it, also on the box spring. There are bed bug encasements, or they're basically a heavy-duty mattress cover that you can get, and they can do two things. First of all, they simplify the mattress. It eliminates the seams because they're covered up, so it simplifies it. There's not as many nooks and crannies from the height. If there were bed bugs on the mattress, they're going to be stuck in there, so they can't get out. If there are bed bugs wanting to get in there to hide, they can't. So that could be something that can be potentially helpful with mattresses as well.
And there's that app you mentioned earlier in the show that you can just put on your smartphone, and it's got lots of good information on that. What's the app title again?
It's called the Bed Bug Field Guide.
And it's free.
It's free, yes. It's put out by an entomologist at The Ohio State University. Just was launched recently, within about the last month or so, I believe. It's free, lots of great information. It's broken down into about 15 or so sections, depending on if you're staying in a hotel or you just want to know what they look like and so forth.
The Bed Bug Field Guide. There you go, Jill. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Let's go to Dave in La Crosse next. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Hi. I heard a couple brief stories a couple weeks ago about a worldwide decline in insects, even in pristine wilderness areas. They're finding reductions in populations about 50% or thereabouts, huge declines, including pollinators and soil recyclers and so on. I just wondered what you know about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern out there right now, DJ.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting. I recently had a conversation with some colleagues on this general topic, and there have been a couple of relatively recent articles, some in the last month or so, some in the last year or so, that have looked specifically at insects. And there's a lot of rumblings out there that insects seem to be declining. It's very hard to actually get enough data to document that. There's one study that came out of Germany where this group basically collected insects for years and years and really decades and quantified all that so they could really get some hard data to show that was going on. When I talk to folks, though, my general impression is that there probably are these declines going on. Again, it's hard to quantify and really prove and document that. Probably the most descriptive scenario or biggest clue to me is I talk to a lot of folks and they say I drove from southern Wisconsin up to the North Woods and I barely had any insects on my windshield. And when you start hearing that message again and again and again, and you talk to folks that say 30 years ago I'd have to stop twice to squeegee my windshield off, that's a lot of clues suggesting that there are these declines going on. So what specifically is declining, say, in Wisconsin, that's really hard to put a finger on. We know there's declines and challenges faced by things like pollinators, but probably other insects as well. when you think about what's going on, both in Wisconsin and around the country and around the world, we've got a lot of habitat loss and fragmentation, and that's going to be a big part of it, I think. But also other things going on, agricultural practices, pesticide use, and so on. It is probably having these very small, subtle effects that are starting to accumulate, and so that's why we're starting to see and hear more about these declines. So I do think there probably are these declines going on. It's just very, very hard to document.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the call. Kathy in Ashland, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Yes, I'm actually spent listening to you by way of sitting in a nice cushy deer stand up here in northern Wisconsin.
Good for you.
My question has to do with, I don't know if the technical name is calling them an Asian beetle, but it looks like a ladybug. And sometimes they show up in the fall of the year when you have a few warm days, and then they seem to be in your home for the next whatever. And I'd like to know, what do people do other than one? Is there a way to prevent them from kind of crawling into your home or whatever by spraying, or what do you advise?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So great question. And the critter you're referring to, the multicolored Asian lady beetle, that one has been in the state for really well over a decade at this point. It's got a long history in the country. They brought it in at one point to try and control various types of aphids. They actually tried bringing it a couple times because it didn't seem to get established. For whatever reason, it got established. It's around. In the southern part of the state, where it was really rainy, they don't seem to be that common this year. I haven't seen that many. The northern part of the state, that's where I've had some reports. Now, what you can do about it. So these insects are similar to box elder bugs and some other things. They like to find a sheltered spot to spend the winter. This could be beneath the bark of a dead tree. I found them there in January. If you go looking for them, in their native range in parts of Asia, they would fly to cracks and crevices and cliff faces and things like that. But they will very readily go to structures and sneak in through cracks and crevices. So two main approaches we can go with. The first is if you look at your home or cabin and try and find potential entrance points. Now, keep in mind, these insects aren't big. They can squeeze through some pretty small gaps. But in theory, if you were to seal up all the cracks and crevices where they can sneak in through, that would keep them outside. So maybe better weather stripping, maybe getting the caulking out and things like that, or using steel wool or something else to stuff in nooks and crannies and seal it up. Sometimes you could spend weeks and weeks doing that, and you're just not going to seal up all those nooks and crannies. So another approach that is commonly used is folks will spray a residual type insecticide. And you can do this yourself with products from the hardware store, something like Ortho Home Defense or similar products. That's just one that comes to mind. If you look at the ingredients, they're from the pyrethroid group. They tend to end in the letters THRIN. So some examples, permethrin, cyfluthrin, deltamethrin, cypermethrin, lambda-cyhalothrin, and so on, but they end in thrin. Those have repellent properties, so what you would do is you would spray them around the same potential entrance points, around soffit areas, around window and door frames where there's maybe a little bit of a gap in the siding. And those products can repel the insects, so if they touch it a little bit, they may say, I don't like this, and go elsewhere and leave. Otherwise, if they contact it long enough, it can kill them outright. That way, if we prevent them from getting in the first place, then they don't become active indoors if they warm up during the winter months. So those are the two approaches we use.
And especially on the sunny side of homes is where you're going to have the biggest concentration, I believe.
Yes, that's a great point, Larry. I'm glad you mentioned that. As Larry just mentioned, the southern and western side of the homes where you get that warm afternoon sun, they love those areas. So I would pay particularly close attention to those spots. If you don't care to do it yourself, you can easily hire a pest control company. They do these types of kind of fall barrier treatments very, very regularly.
Joe from Wausau emailed in to ask how to control potato bugs.
So by potato bugs, You know, that is a name that I've heard thrown around for a couple different things. I suspect you might be referring to Colorado potato beetles.
That's my guess.
Yeah. And those can be very problematic if you're growing potatoes, if you're a potato farmer, or just growing some spuds in your home garden. Couple things you can do, especially if you have a relatively small potato patch, because we get two generations per year of this insect, start scouting your potatoes very regularly. Once they're up out of the ground, the eggs of Colorado potato beetle look like clusters of miniature yellow footballs. And so if you're looking, especially on the undersides of leaves, if you're seeing groups of those, squish them with your thumb and finger, because if you're squishing those before they hatch, we're taking out, you know, a dozen or two at a time. So that can be helpful. Otherwise, for the larvae, there is a pretty good organic product that works pretty well, and the potato growers, the farmers, can use a slightly different product, contains the same ingredient, though, and that is the ingredient is spinosad. The product is Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, and so that's one you can find at a lot of garden centers or order it online, and that one can work pretty well against the larvae of Colorado potato beetles. So for a home garden, that's often one of the best routes that you can go with.
All right, let's take another call. Carol in Duluth.
Hello?
Hi, Carol. What's on your mind?
Well, I know bed bugs are a serious topic, and I have a little lighter story about it. I was 3 years old, and we lived in a big old farmhouse, and naturally there was a few bugs here and there in the old farmhouse. So one day someone came to visit, and I was supposed to go up and take a nap. Well, naturally I didn't want to go up to take a nap, but I finally went up there, and I hadn't been up there very long, and I screamed, "Mother, mother, there's bed bugs." And my mother ran up to see what was going on, and there was just a plain old bug in my bed. But I had heard the grown-ups talk about bed bugs. So my mother went downstairs, you know, and she's appalled because it was thought of people who weren't clean back then. And she told the lady that, you know, it wasn't. She said, she was sure the lady was really wondering if it was bed bugs or not.
Good story, Carol. Thanks. Yeah, they're not all bugs that you find on a bed are not necessarily bed bugs.
Right, yeah.
There you go.
And that's actually one of the commonest questions I get at the diagnostic lab. Someone finds something in the bedroom, could be a carpet beetle or, you know, any other insect, and the commonest question, is this a bed bug? A lot of cases, it's not. It's just something that accidentally ended up there.
There you go. Thanks again, Carol, for that story. It's great. Let's go to Dana in Pittsville. Hi, Dana.
Oh, I was calling as far as to find out if fleas live in a house on their own, as far as that I have a dog and she has puppies right now. And as far as they can't seem to quite get ahead of the keeping the flea treatment, as far as that she was bringing in fleas. And now, as far as I'm kind of limited what I can really treat with, to keep ahead, and I was kind of curious, maybe the fleas are living in the house until the treatment wears off on the dog.
Yeah.
So, a good question. When it comes to the fleas that we commonly see in the state, the by far the common species is the cat flea, both on cats and dogs. It's the same species. That one really needs to feed on animals, such as a dog or a cat. They can feed on some other wild animals too. They technically can bite humans, but we're not a good food source for them. They won't survive on us. If you left the house completely empty long enough, you know, they're not going to survive under those conditions either. So they do need that animal host for a blood meal. In terms of what to do about it in a case like this, I'd really chat with your vet to figure out, you know, what's best to do if there are treatments or if it's puppies, you know, are they too young to get an appropriate treatment? So I chat with your veterinarian about that. Otherwise, certainly for adult dogs, there are flea and tick preventative treatments that can be applied to them to take care of it and help break up the flea life cycle. Another thing that can be very helpful is very regular vacuuming. because you get the larvae that can be living down in a carpeted area on little bits of dried, crumbly blood crumbs. If we are vacuuming the carpet, we may be getting rid of some of those. And also they pupate there, and that's where the new adults emerge from, is often those carpeted areas. And so very regular vacuuming once, twice a day can help kind of stir up some of those and remove them from the picture, so to speak.
All right, there we go. Let's. Thanks again for calling, Dana. Anne in Random Lake, on to you now.
Hi, I was wondering if box elder bugs did any real damage to anything. We have some big old box elder trees around our house, and seasonally we'll see just thousands of box elder bugs just congregating, you know, at the base of a tree, etc. We get a few in the house. They don't really do anything, but we've always wondered if, you know, they're just, we're happy leaving them alone if they're not really hurting anything. Is that the case?
For the most part, yes. They're really not going to be hurting much. Technically, they're plant feeders, so they will be feeding on the box elder trees. They can also technically feed on some closely related trees, certain maples and things like that. But they really don't seem to harm the plants much at all. If they sneak indoors, they're a little bit of a nuisance. If you had enough of them get indoors and those insects died in, say, a wall void, maybe that could cause some secondary issues where, you know, insects like carpet beetles that are feeding on dead insects might pop up. But in the grand scheme of things, they're really pretty harmless, I feel.
All right, there we go. Thank you very much, Anne, for calling. Somebody noted that the name Dead Bug Brew sounds like a good name for a craft beer. You're right. It does sound like a good name for craft beer. Betty in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Not anymore. I'm in Wanakee. Now, the only Wanakee in the world.
All right.
And a friend of ours years ago, a husband had to do traveling on the highway, staying in motels, and he was very knowledgeable of all these things, and checked in a motel one evening, so on and so forth. Next morning, got up and showered and got dressed and decided, well, he would go a ways before he stopped for breakfast. So he started down the highway. Before long, his ankles and legs were on fire. He was itching so terrible that he had to stop and go to a restroom, and he was covered with fleas.
Oh, fleas. Yeah, not a good result.
Yeah, not the type of experience you want to have while driving. That's certainly an interesting story. I mean, the fleas we see really don't like to get onto people. We're not a good host for them. They can bite us. Usually, if you bump into fleas and there's no pets around, it tells me there's some wild animal that was a host. So maybe there was somehow a raccoon or cat or a stray cat or something like that somehow involved in this case. Maybe it was hanging out under the car and fleas might have wandered from there.
So there you go, Betty. Good story. Thanks very much for calling. Jerry in Prairie du Chien says carpenter ants show up in their home every spring and early summer. What are the risks to our residents of having leaving it untreated?
So that's a really good question. And when it comes to carpenter ants, they kind of get mixed up with termites a little bit. So termites, which are really pretty rare in the state, termites can go and eat wood, and actually they've got microbes that help them digest it. Carpenter ants aren't actually interested in eating wood. What they can do, though, is carpenter ants can go to wood that is soft or rotting or compromised, that's a little bit softer, and they can excavate that to create a cavity to nest in. So if you have carpenter ants that keep popping up with some regularity, I would do some detective work. Often observing and watching them can be helpful to figure out where they're coming from, where they're going to. If they do seem to be nesting in a house, it makes it a little suspicious there may be some water damage that needs a closer look.
And with that, we are out of time. PJ, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. You're back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again.
Sounds good, Larry.
Thank you so much. PJ Leash directs the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So go online. He's got all kinds of things on that website for you. Tomorrow at 11, you'll hear the annual Splendid Table Turkey Confidential special. And then at 12, we'll replay a show we did about gratitude. It's a wonderful interview. I really enjoyed it. And enjoy having you with us. Stay with us. Lots more in store.